You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast, your daily conversation about the Washington Wizards, and unfortunately for the Wizards, the ongoing conversation about how they could just not stop Isaiah freaking Thomas. What an unbelievable game two. Wizards losing overtime. The loss was a bummer, but the game was, to use that cliche term these days, an instant classic, even though the Wizards came up on the short end. Here to help me figure out what the hell happened and what's next for the Wizards is the man, the myth, the legend from Bulls Forever, Mr. Jake Whitaker. Jake, how are you?
I am good. The Wizards continuing with their knack of losing instant classics. So that's unfortunate, but otherwise good.
You know, it's funny you say that, like, as somebody who grew up rooting for Georgetown and pays attention to them, whenever Georgetown shows up on like sort of an instant classic situation, they always lose. They lost to they lost to Carolina. They lost to Villanova. You know, Jordan hits for Carolina, Villanova the perfect game. They never showed the game they won the title because it wasn't really an instant classic. It wasn't a great game. I think you're right though. It does feel like the Wizards, yeah, like these these great games. I mean, I know they just beat Atlanta, but that wasn't like his first round was Atlanta. I don't know. Yeah. All right, so we're going to go through the who, what, where, when, why of it all here. There's an unbelievable amount to get to. I'm 100% sure we're not going to touch at all. More podcasts. You guys know that's the good deal about this. We'll be back with another one tomorrow. But let's just try to figure out, Jake, as much as we can. Ask her some questions on Twitter. Of course, you can find us on Twitter, at Locked On Wizards. I'm at Ben Standing, and you are at Jake Whitaker, right?
Yes.
That's W-H-I-T-A-C-R-E. No underscores. I like that in a guest.
Yes.
So I got some questions. I got this one here from at Eric Ring 96, and I think his question really kind of sums up everything, Jake. And his question simply is, why?
Why? Yeah.
Why? I guess let me set up a couple things here with this. I mean, the basic gist is Isaiah Thomas scored not one, not two, not 3 points, but 53 points. He had 29 in the fourth quarter in overtime alone. The Wizards in that span had 30. It was just unbelievable watching him, you know, the smallest guy out on the court. He has dental surgery earlier in the day to deal with that tooth knocked out from the other day. Today is the birthday of his sister, who he just had to bury a few days ago. We all know about that story. Unbelievable. We'll get more to him in a second. On the flip side, John Wall has 40 points and 13 assists. He was amazing, certainly through the first, say, three quarters or so. The Wizards had a six-point lead with, 2:43 left. They're up 110-104, but then Boston hits back-to-back threes. Scott Brooks says they gave up two mistake threes on that. Boston tied it. The Wizards had a shot at the end of regulation. They had two shots at the end of regulation. Wall and Beal both missed. Celtics ran away in overtime. That's just the basics, but there was so many other things that happened in this game. I guess just for you, Jake, what's sort of the first thing you feel like we need to get into?
I think the big thing is just fatigue late. I think, you know, you look at how the Wizards performed at the start of the first and second half. They really had their way. You know, even when Boston changed their lineup for the second half, Washington had no problems getting buckets early. But you know, I think once you got to the end of the game and you know the five starters that have really carried the team all season are out there against a Boston team that's a bit fresher and, you know, has been able to manage things with a little more depth throughout the season. It wasn't shocking that one team played a lot better. And I think that's really When you look at the defense being a half step late, those jumpers not falling, not being able to get to the rim, it just one team was tired and one team wasn't. And I think that was kind of the story at the end of the game.
So I'm 1,000% with you. I mean, like Isaiah Thomas was just unbelievable. He was making threes from the corner. He was just darting in and out of traffic. You know, he'd get that pick and roll fit squared up against a big man. And that's kind of how he basically fouled out Gortat and Morris. He didn't foul Gortat. That was Marcus Smart, actually. But he fouled out Morris late with, you know, he gets switched onto Morris. Morris, who played, had a really good game despite the injured ankle, but he, you know, not 100%, having to then deal with Isaiah Thomas. And, you know, Thomas has had his way with the Wizards big men whenever they had switched. So I'm with you. As I'm watching the game, I keep thinking, boy, the Wizards just look completely out of gas. Wall and Beal both played 47 minutes. Gortat over almost 42 before fouling out in overtime. That's an insane amount of minutes. That said, just to be fair to the Celtics, I guess, I mean, the Wizards basically played eight guys. I mean, Oubre and Jason Smith played heavy minutes. Brandon Jennings played his normal minutes. Bogdanovich only played basically seven until he had to come in after Gortat fouled out. But I look at Boston. Isaiah Thomas played 44 minutes. Horford over 42. Jay Crowder, 41. They only played eight guys. Marcus Smart basically played 40. They definitely looked fresher, though, down the stretch. So, you know, they didn't play a ton of guys either, but they definitely looked fresher. Isaiah Thomas didn't look like he was out of gas at any point.
Yeah, he just – scientists are going to want to do something with him once he's gone. You know, that he just doesn't make sense on any – in any kind of understanding of how humans work. Mike Prada did a video about Isaiah Thomas, and it's just crazy how he actually uses his lack of height to create, you know, different angles that other players can't pull off. And, you know, I think he really was able to exploit that tonight. And, he's just crazy.
It really is. I mean, look, he was, you know, we knew who the top four MVP candidates were. I'm sort of curious who comes in fifth. I think Isaiah Thomas is in the mix. I think John Wall's in the mix. I think Giannis is in the mix. Maybe Steph Curry. So Thomas had a great year. The unfortunate tragedy involving his sister has taken things to another level. And he, I mean, literally nothing can faze this guy, at least at this point. He's getting light, real heavy stuff in real life is getting thrown at him. The tooth is getting thrown at him. He got his head banged onto the floor at some point. By the way, this was just an unbelievably physical game. I tweeted at some point, this felt like it was a combination of the old school physical Pat Riley Knicks, the bad boy Pistons teams, combined with modern NBA where guys are just free flowing offense and draining threes all over the place for the most part. It was a really fun game. I mean, again, I know it didn't end fun for the Wizards side of things, but it was a really fun game. And Isaiah Thomas was just unreal. And, like, you know, the Wizards had no answer for him. At end of story. I will note this, though. I mean, you mentioned the tired legs, and we're talking about it in the context of Isaiah Thomas. I think the other way it came out was with three-point shooting in particular. The Wizards finished 10 of 34 from three. Now, that's a bad percentage off the bat. It's even worse when you realize they were 7 for 14 at halftime. They went 2 for 11 in the fourth quarter and overtime. John Wall made his first two threes of the game, and I think he was 3 for 5 at one point. He finished 3 of 10. Bradley Beal, who we'll get to in a little bit, he goes 1 of 9 from three. Beal looked off the whole game. Again, we'll come back to him in a minute. But it just felt like, especially when the Celtics took that lead in overtime, the Wizards starting settling for jumpers, tired legs, and they just did not have enough to make it. Oh, on the flip side of that, the Celtics went 13 for 36 for the game. That's reasonable, but they went 5 for 10 in the fourth quarter, including those two late to tie the game.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just something. It's not just that the actual shot is, you know, kind of off when you have those tired legs, but you're not even getting the space you really need to get off a good look. So it's just kind of a, you know, compounding effect of, you know, maybe being tired and not quite on your game. So. Yeah, I think it was just a lot of bad stuff coming together at the wrong time tonight.
The Wizards also have finished with 17 turnovers. You know, you might just say, well, that's, you know, sort of average. Yeah, I mean, it's a little, you know, it's not great, but it's not the worst thing in the world. But they had zero in the first quarter, I believe, right? Isn't that right?
Right.
So
yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, so, I mean, so if things piled up there. Let's go back to the end of regulation. So Isaiah Thomas hits a couple free throws to tie the game. The Wizards have the ball with 16 seconds left. You know what's coming. We all know what's coming. The John Wall isolation play. You know, I give Scott Brooks a ton of credit this year. I mean, give John Wall the credit for taking his game to next levels this season. He's feeling healthier, whatever. He's just looked great, and he was just a monster. In the first quarter, he had 19-6. He was making shots all over the place. He was doing what you want your franchise player to do. He was taking over. And he kept going, and he kept going until he did seem to get tired late. I'll look up maybe his fourth quarter and overtime stats in a second. But they get to that isolation play, and there were points this year where it felt like Scott Brooks was either calling certain plays or getting into Wall that he needs to do things differently. But in the end, we got sort of what we've seen Wall do time and time again. He holds the ball for a long time. He eventually drives. He gets all sort of under the left wing, takes a fadeaway jumper that misses. Now, they were fortunate that Bradley Beal got the rebound. They were unfortunate that his shot from sort of the, I don't know, just under the free throw line came, you know, barely nicked the rim. And then they went to overtime. And in my head, I kind of thought, you know what, they look so tired. I kind of have a feeling this is it. And it was. But I'm not a big fan of that John Wall ISO play. The reason why the Wizards were doing so well most of this game, Scott Brooks said as much on television during the game, was the passing. And that's why I can't stand that ISO play typically. I know he was making shots for the most part today, but he definitely looked tired late. And in general, we just have seen historically that play just does not work for him.
Yeah, and I mean, I do get conceptually why some teams try to go to that late, especially if it's a tie game, because, you know, worst case scenario, if you kind of just hold it, you limit your chance of a turnover, which, you know, gives the other team a much better chance to steal it. But it's just not a play that works for the Wizards. And, you know, given everything that, you know, was factoring into how the Wizards were struggling late, it just seemed like a time to make a more aggressive play to win it. And I think even before that, it was kind of curious that Brooks called the timeout with 14 seconds left, because it gave Boston a chance to get Isaiah Thomas off the floor. And, you know, if they hadn't called the timeout there, it would have given, you know, Washington some sort of a mismatch to exploit, whether it's Wall trying to post up Thomas or, you know, trying to get a shot with Otto shooting over Thomas. And it just, I thought that was kind of a mistake, especially if you're just calling a timeout to have Wall run an ISO play. It just, that was kind of a miscalculation in hindsight.
I mean, like I said, under a normal game with normal minutes, even, I mean, I'm not saying I would have liked it almost regardless, but this was a game Wall was making his shots. Okay. But he looked just exhausted on top of it, and historically it just has not worked. So you knew it was coming, and unfortunately the result was what I likely figured. The Beal attempt was even more frustrating, I think, on some level if you're a Wizards fan, because he was open. He got the offensive rebound. He's right there in the lane, but he had just the ball that had no shot from the start. Again, we'll get to him in a second. All right, Jake, let's get to the who of it all, as in who was that wearing the Morris 5 jersey today? I mean, everybody's making the joke, wait, is that Markieff Morris or Marcus Morris playing? And honestly, they could probably put in Marcus, and I don't know if anybody would notice. But, you know, look, I wasn't sure at all that Markieff Morris was going to play after that badly sprained ankle against Atlanta. I'm sorry, against Atlanta. Against Boston in game one. Scott Brooks, you know, even during his pregame talk, said it was a true game-time decision. But there was Morris starting the game. And look, right off the bat, he's making a couple jumpers, and he really set the tone for the game. He first comes out to talk, get up to Al Horford. He said after the injury, because he stepped on Al, he landed on Al Horford's foot that caused the injury in the last game. And if you look at the replay, I guess depending on your point of view, Al Horford either slid his foot in there in a dirty play or it was bad luck, however you want to look at it. Markieff wanted to know, so he seemingly went and talked to Horford and did so with his usual intensity. And then pretty early in the game, they're sort of, he and Horford are going for a loose ball, and he seemingly just threw Horford into the stands right in front of where Ted Leonsis was, actually. He really set the tone. He had a good game, 16 points, 6 rebounds. He made a shot or two late in that fourth quarter to help give them that lead. He ultimately did foul out, as did Gortat, but considering the ankle and all that, his presence was needed and all that. What did you think of Morris? I guess, where were you pregame? Did you think they were going to get him back at all and get anything out of him? And then based on that, what did you think of what he did?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised that he played just because, you know, while Morris can, you know, get up and, you know, be explosive at times, he's not a guy that always needs to, you know, jump around a lot to be effective. So I thought he'd probably try to just grit through it and, you know, give what he could. And, you know, with the way he tends to rack up fouls pretty quickly, it's, you know, it's not like they needed him for 40 minutes. So, yeah, I wasn't shocked that he played, and I wasn't really all that shocked that he tried to set a very physical tone early to try to, you know, either get revenge or try to change the tone of the series, I guess. So I wasn't surprised by that, but it was nice to see him playing effective early. It seems like the Wizards have really made a concerted effort here in the playoffs, especially to get him going. And, you know, it's one of those things that can be a blessing and a curse at times, because it feels like opposing teams are, you know, happy to have Morris go off rather than let Wall or Porter or Beal get going. But, you know, when Morris has it going like he does, like he did in the first half, you know, it opens up so much, even though Porter and Beal didn't benefit from it right away. It made things a lot easier for Wall and helped Washington get out to that big lead.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, especially like my concern when late in the season, and it was the idea, well, are the Wizards better off facing Cleveland or Boston in this round? And it seemed pretty clear you want to stay away from LeBron. But part of my thinking was, you know what? The Celtics, when they are just all at it, they are so aggressive. I don't know if the Wizards can honestly handle their aggressiveness. They don't seem to always want to do that. But Markieff Morris is the one guy who will absolutely push back. I mean, John Wall will as well. But Morris, he is the enforcer. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And we saw that, you know, in this game as well. He picked up a technical at one point. He got in with Isaiah Thomas. I mean, I mentioned the physical part. I mean, it was a stretch there. Marcus Smart's diving for ball, bangs his head into the ground. Isaiah Thomas smacks his face into the ground, getting hit. Then Otto Porter gets whacked in the nose. Blood starts pouring out all over the place. Ian Eagle called it a gusher. Oubre got hit. And in the middle of that, sort of different, at one point, Moore sort of got in there to kind of see what sort of be like, hey, enough of this. And I just think that's, they needed that element as much as they needed the scoring, the rebounding, and all that. They needed that. I don't, because without him doing that, I don't know where they were getting that from. So I think that alone was key, unfortunately, for them. You know, he played 27 minutes. That's obviously less than he would have played normally. Scott Brooks had to sub him in and out of the lineup a little bit late, bring in Oubre for sort of offense, defense, because he was, you know, I'm sure wasn't 100%. So it was good to see he was out there. Whether it was Markieff or Marcus, whichever one, they did a good job.
yeah, I mean, you can't prove that it wasn't Marcus who got hurt in game one in the first place.
That is,
and that's might have actually been Markieff. So
that is a fair point. That is a fair point. And it's interesting because when I was some Marcus during the Atlanta series, he's wearing a Markieff jersey, making it even more difficult to figure out what's going on. It's very tricky. All right, let's get to the when of it all, Jake, as in when did Bradley Beal go into the witness protection program? Now, if I tell you he only had 14 points on 4 of 15 shooting and he was 1 of 9 from 3, okay, look, guys are going to have bad game shooting. I get that, right? You don't sort of kill somebody for that, especially a guy like Beal who typically has been, you know, one of their, you know, their best shooter, just as a pure shooter. But he just looked off from the start. He didn't even take his first field goal attempt until the second quarter, and part of that was John was cooking, but it wasn't just that. He never seemed completely energized, engaged. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying you're going to sit here and tell me what the, you know. You have the answer. I don't know if he was sick. I don't know if he just was in a funk. He didn't meditate today. I don't know. Whatever it was, he was just off. And the biggest thing is, if you tell me, well, so here's the thing. He goes 4 for 15, like I said, and 1 of 9 from three. The other four starters plus Oubre and Smith shot 40 for 80 from the field. Those were basically the eight guys. Or yeah, the seven guys who played, basically. I mean, Jennings only took a couple shots, and same with Bogdanovich. You know, I mean, that should be enough. If Beal just does a little more, even if he shoots the same, but just does a little bit more, has some more energy and whatnot. Just, I don't know. It just was a weird game and a frustrating one in the sense that so much went right for the Wizards to have him be so off. I don't want to say it was just on him, but he does a little bit more. They probably figure out a way to win this game.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the shooting, but, you know, he had quite a few turnovers and just really it seemed like they didn't want to let Beal, you know, get any kind of secondary playmaking action going on. And, you know, Wall, to his credit, did a great job with what Boston gave him. But, you know, I think the Celtics did a good job of kind of keeping anyone else except Wall from really creating much and trying to just make everyone else jump shooters. And so, you know, I think that's something they're going to have to really make some adjustments because, you know, Beal, you know, doesn't really have any easy possessions, whether it's Avery Bradley guarding him or Marcus Smart. You know, it's just a challenge. He's not going to get a lot of clean looks coming off screens or trying to set something up in the pick and roll. And so, you know, I think Washington's going to have to think long and hard about how to, you know, maybe adjust his role a little bit to, you know, take advantage of what he can do well and, you know, still get the best out of everyone else.
Yeah. I want to come back to this sort of point when we get to our last block here, because I think there's something that sort of, as we look ahead to game three, to consider. Look, I'm going to chalk it up to a bad game for Beal. It's a bad timing to have it there. But you're right, though. I mean, Boston has, they are very deep and very aggressive out there on the perimeter with Bradley, with Smart, with Crowder. Not that he's necessarily guarding Beal, but he's out there. And yeah, I mean, they definitely, you know, I'm sure the Wizards were, I didn't get to see much of the post game. I'm sure the Wizards were talking about the, you know, some holding and some physical play there. Maybe Scott Brooks can work the refs a little bit on that one. But yeah, they got to find a way, as you said, to get him going. All right, let's get to the where of it all, as in where do we begin with the Wizards bench? Now, on the one hand, props to Kelly Oubre and Jason Smith. They both had good games. Oubre, 12 points, 7 rebounds, hit 2 threes. You know, he was in there late, and, you know, God bless him, he didn't screw up late. You know, he didn't have some egregious turnover, or he didn't find himself, at least I didn't notice it, say he find himself in some awkward position on the court when he was in there. He did a reasonable job. Jason Smith, 10 points, 4 for 6 from the field, 2 for 2 from 3. You know, he's not going to help you a ton defensively in this matchup, but he gave you what you needed. But I come back to the Brandon Jennings things. I really thought it was weird that Bogdanovich barely played. I didn't realize how little he had played until right around the time that Gortat, I think, fouled out. He'd only played like 7 minutes, like I said, at that point. It's odd that Brooks, I guess defensively, he just does not like that matchup for them at all. But again, you come back to how tired some of these guys were earlier. Maybe that would have helped a little bit late. Who knows? But Brandon Jennings, Jake, I mean, you know, I don't pretend that you listen to the podcast on any regularity, because you've got you got a life to lead. But I mean, the Jennings Wall pairing has been driving me crazy for a while. But at least when Jennings was out there with Beal, it felt like, okay, things were going all right. But right now, he's got nothing going on. He's not getting you those assists. He's not making shots at all. Defensively, he's already bad. I've been sort of half joking for a while that they need to get Trey Burke in the lineup. I don't think I'm joking anymore. At least Trey Burke can make a three. At least he did during the season. That's a tangible asset. Right now, there's nothing tangible in a positive way for Brandon Jennings. I think they need to figure out something, because right now, it's not even just that they're playing sort of 4-on-5 with him out of the court. It's almost kind of worse than that. And again, you could see it with Wall and Beal's minutes. Brooks just did not have much trust in him or the bench as a whole, this game.
It's just, I think the thing with Jennings is like he's always going to be a wild card, and more times than not it's going to be a negative. But I think especially in this series with this matchup, he's just not the right guy against a guy like Terry Rozier. It's not a good matchup, and Boston is basically just feasting anytime he's on the court. And I think Jennings isn't exactly a defensive presence. He can, get those steals every now and then, but the cost of getting those steals with kind of the extra fouls that he gives up, and maybe getting out of position to get those steals. I think defensively you're just as bad off with Trey Burke, and like you said, he can give you a little bit of outside shooting when you have to pair him with Wall. So yeah, I don't see why Brooks shouldn't at least give it a shot. I mean, the Wizards really just don't have anything to lose at this point if you're basically just giving up 12-0 runs almost every time you're on the floor. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if maybe if they try to hope Jennings gets that little bump playing at home, or maybe they try to switch it up for game three.
When it comes to the bench in general, obviously it's been a talking point all season. We've all whacked that pinata a bunch about the moves that were made last offseason. And obviously they've moved on from Marcus Thornton and Andrew Nicholson. They bring in Bogdanovich. They added Jennings, who look, partly because they weren't getting much out of Trey Burke as the quote unquote backup point guard. Jennings was an upgrade, or he has been largely. I mean, he at least keeps the pace going. Offensively, he can, he can get guys the ball. His shot is broken, and defensively he's a train wreck, but he at least was doing some of the positive stuff. But it feels like things have gone backwards with this bench. But again, Oubre and Smith are bench guys. They had a good game, but no Yan Mahimi again. If I don't know what he's this isn't necessarily a great series for him because Boston doesn't have that traditional interior low post big man. But not having him around, the defense has just looked or I'm sorry, the bench has just looked worse and worse. And it's it's easy. We can all say we told you so, right? That the bench was bad, this, that, and the other. But this was a game where, especially when Bogdanovich, the one guy we all sort of gravitate towards, say, "Oh, hey, he's good though." He barely played. It really just sort of kind of this series is just feeling more and more like the bench is getting exposed. We already knew it, but now sort of everybody's getting a big look at it.
Yeah, and it's it was something, when I was kind of trying to just think through the series, it's I thought the bench would be a problem, but not to this extent. I really thought Jennings would, give you some kind of glimmer of hope here and there, but it definitely has not happened so far. And if you don't get Yamahimi back, then you really don't have any defensive coverage for him or Bogdanovich. And that really kind of limits, well, not limit, there's not a lot of protection behind them when they're out of position on defense, which only makes the problems worse when they're not creating on offense, which they haven't really done so far.
Yeah, I mean, Yan Mahimi, I'm not trying to make him out to be, Bill Russell defensively or anything, but you're right. I mean, when he's out there, at least, I mean, he shows he's got some offensive game, but when he's out there, at least his presence helps offset the weak defenders, the guys who can score though, but aren't good defensively, and then that allows Brooks to maybe not have to go with the starters too much with the second unit because he's got somebody out there to help stabilize things. But when you take him off the court, Jason Smith has been a, he's probably been their best off, probably ended up being the best offseason move they made, but he's just not a rim protector or a defender like that. And so it almost, I mean, you shorten rotations in the playoffs anyway, but it almost like four is forcing Brooks to have to stay with these starters longer. And again, you look at the minutes and you see, we talked about the tired legs before. Just, it just makes it tougher to not have one of those guys out on the court. Without Mahimi. Let's get to the last point here. Oh, actually, I want one last thing. I forgot to mention one of the Twitter responses we got from at Chelsea B. Coombs simply was, "Why won't Brandon Jennings play better?" I think that's a fair way to look at it. Why won't he just play better? Yeah. You said he's a wild card. I think that's probably the way to the way to look at it. All right, the last one, Jake. What do you expect for Game 3? This was a wild game. I'll come up with sort of this easy question. I don't know what I mean. Look, the Wizards almost won this game. It's not like it was a total disaster by any stretch, but some of the problems keep coming up, especially Isaiah Thomas. A lot of people have been asking, do the Wizards need to post Isaiah Thomas up more than they did? That it seemed like they maybe went away from attacking him defensively late. I think this is where that lack of bench hurts them. They don't have somebody off the bench that they can bring in. Like, they don't have their own, like, Jamal Crawford, right? A guy who you could say, okay, fine.
Right.
You want Isaiah Thomas to guard the weakest guy? We're going to put a guy who can get on the, who can take it to the hole, can burn him. They don't have that. Otto Porter's game is not a post up. He's shooting the threes. Kelly Oubre, you don't really want him handling the ball too much. Bogdanovich, he's a catch and shoot guy. That's not going to sort of bury Isaiah Thomas. So that's one thing that maybe they could do differently is figure out a way to attack Thomas defensively. What, how about for you though? What do you kind of, what do you think maybe is the key, or what would you, I don't know, what do you think they need to change for game three? What do you expect? What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you post up when you can, but really, your threats that way are just Wall and Morris. And so, maybe, try to stagger their minutes a little differently so that you always have one of them out there so that you can maybe try to create that kind of a matchup. But, I don't think there's a lot of major adjustments to make. I mean, it's easy to lose sight of, both of these games were close and winnable for Washington, for the most part. And I think if you switch the setting back to Washington, some of those threes that went for the Celtics in Boston probably don't go in Washington and vice versa. And so, maybe you get, Bogdanovich hitting a couple threes that he doesn't. And, just flipping home court, might be enough. But at the same time, you do need to figure out some way to make the minutes count when Wall and Beal aren't together and you don't have Jennings and Beal. Is it, do you maybe even try Satoransky and see if he just, makes things a little different and, gives Boston a look that they're not expecting? I think. It's not crazy to try, something a little different just to see if Boston, tries to throw a different lineup and get out of their own rhythm. And, hopefully, by Thursday, maybe Jan Mahimi's closer to health. I mean, it's, anyone's guess at this point, but, I think it's more just about minor tweaks and really just getting back kind of to figuring out a defensive scheme to keep Isaiah Thomas out of the paint. It seemed like there was just way too many miscommunications that let Thomas get in there to either score or, create those kickout opportunities that Boston can certainly take advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Mahimi. I really do kind of feel like it's just gotten to the point. My issue for Mahimi from the start was, well, wait a minute, you can't ever play him and Gortat together. So, when Morris has to leave the game, then having this third big man doesn't really even matter. You know what? Screw it. At this point, they just need the best talent they can get. He's obviously a good player. He looked, for the most part, pretty reasonable when he played after the All-Star break. He needs to play. I mean, I'm not saying, I don't know what's going on. I'm assuming he's hurt. I don't know anything else beyond that, so I'm not assuming he's, not trying. I'm assuming he legitimately can't play. But I think if they can get him back in the game, you get that extra 15 to 20 minutes from somebody else who's a quality player. I really think that can make a huge difference, even if it's not, they still don't have a backup point guard. I get that. They still don't have a guy who can, other than sort of, they don't have another guy on the bench who can take the ball from the wing and drive to the basket effectively. They don't have those things. They're not getting those things, right? But that's over. But they do have this guy. He can come in and play. They need him to play. And granted, even if they say he could play in the next game, we don't even know what that means, right? He hasn't played now in, what, a couple weeks. So we don't even know where he's at from a rust standpoint. Lastly, I'll just say, For me, the key player coming into the series was Otto Porter for twofold. One, because Isaiah Thomas, if they're going to put Isaiah Thomas on him, he needs to make some shots. You know, he had 13 points today. He had 9 rebounds. I think that's a sign of him taking advantage of a Thomas. But the other point was Bradley Beal was going to get harassed this series by those guards that we talked about, and they needed to therefore have somebody else step up. Now, Otto was 1-for-4 from 3. Bogdanovich 0-for-2 and barely played. I think if you know if they're going to try to take Beal out, then the Wizards need those two guys, Porter and Bogdanovich, to hit some threes to help out the cause. But like you said, at the end of the day, they almost had it. Bummer they didn't get it for the Wizards fans. And 0-2 is not good. But they the Wizards have not lost to the Celtics at home this year. The home team hasn't lost in the series yet. So if the Wizards can hold court, then they're back to Boston. You know, no harm, no foul.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, just one other thing is, you know, it's – I think it's easy to kind of criticize Gortat because, you know, scoring-wise, it hasn't really been there. And I think sometimes people see the rebounds that he doesn't get without appreciating – kind of some of the defensive miscues that kind of put everyone out of position, and then it makes it easier for Boston to kind of get in position to snag some of those rebounds away. And so, I think Gortat can have a better game if, you know, the Wizards can really ramp it up on defense and kind of figure out some of the stuff that obviously did not work while trying to guard Thomas.
You know, he had
today.
He had exactly 14 points and 10 rebounds for the third time in the playoffs. Fun fact, right?
Mr. Consistency.
He had 14 and 10, I think, in the first half in game one, too. But he messed it up by scoring and rebounding more. Jerk.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's end it there, Jake. So much to get through. We did what we could do. You are the man. I really appreciate you staying up late. I know you got like a real job and all that kind of stuff, but I wanted to get you on here finally, so I'm glad we worked that out. You guys already know, go follow, and more importantly, go harass Jake on Bullets Forever. Be nice to him sometimes, but it's Jake's a fun person to pick on Twitter because he is overly self-deprecating, so he invites it. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've got a picture of my bald spot on my Twitter avatar. I mean, that's, you know, just come at me.
All right, and of course, you guys, follow us on or subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you do your podcasting. If you're on iTunes, go please write a review. 5-star ratings is cool too. I never say lie, but the more people know about the podcast, the better it is for all involved. And the ratings help with that. All right, we'll call it there, Jake. Really appreciate it again. Thanks to you guys for listening and for joining in on Twitter. The Wizards are back in town Wednesday. They play Game 3 Thursday. More podcasts to come here on Locked On Wizards. And until next time, see ya.
Beal gets open for 3. Dagger!
Somewhere deep inside your mind, there's a place where dreams live. And now those dreams have the chance to come to life. Because USAA Life Insurance is sponsoring the Live Your Dreams sweepstakes, where you could win $50,000. That's $50,000 to let those dreams out of your head and into your hands. Enter for a chance to win and view official rules at www.usaa.com/lifesweeps or call 1-800-531-LIFE.
No purchase necessary. USAA Life Insurance Company, San Antonio, Texas, and in New York, by USAA Life Insurance Company of New York, Highland Falls, New York.